Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Unknown Zone. This is the talk show about the unusual. I'm your host, Dave Turco, with co-host Judy Sillins. Tonight, folks, we have a great episode for you. It's called Medical Miracles. You're going to want to listen to the whole show. We've got lots of firsthand stories that are just kind of amazing of people. And it's one of the things I like. My mother always said that I was perverse. And that was because I loved oddities. I love unusual things, as I do the Unknown Zone. But I do prefer to have a happy ending, that's for sure. And these do. These are absolutely horrendous things happen to people. People dying of cancer. People being decapitated and living.
Mm-hmm.
People surviving all sorts of things. It's just astounding. Car accidents that, I mean, why are they alive? But we'll get into why they're alive. But they are, and they are true medical miracles. These are cases that are studied. You know, these are cases that either are presented at a doctor's office, emergency rooms, or whatever. Doctors have to do with them. They're all documented.
And they're all documented by multiple different studies that have been done on them before and after of the different problems that they had.
Judy, I just wanted to say something. Shout out to all of our listeners on Blog Talk Radio. I sort of control the horizontal and the vertical, as they used to do on the Outer Limits, right? So I get to see all sorts of things about not only our my studio thing. So I see callers and whatever, listeners, blah blah blah. But we get some neat things like audience geography. Only about 73% of our audience is from the U.S. It used to be much higher. It used to be almost exclusively Americans. That's not the case anymore. And what's super cool, the French. France, it makes up over 7% of our listeners. So speak clearly, Judith, unless you're speaking French. The U.K. is only 2.3%. Norway used to be number two. Isn't that kind of weird?
Yeah, I mean,
the Norwegians, but we have this,
yeah,
that goes like way back when we were on the radio, and somehow through a freak anomaly on our regular radio from Westerly, Rhode Island, over 3,000 miles away, it was being heard in Norway. This is not on the internet. This is when it was on the regular radio, local radio, 50 watts or whatever it was. So some antenna, we could have been shouting it that loud. Russians are 5% of our listeners.
Oh, say hi to Putin.
Oh, don't start. hey, maybe.
Well, I mean, he's over there.
He might listen. That would be great.
Right.
I don't care what anybody says. I mean, he's not for us, but he's a strong leader. What can I say? India, we have about 3% of our listeners are from India. Poland. And I find this kind of weird. I mean, not Germany, not Italy, but Poland is higher than those countries.
That's strange. Yeah.
South Africa, just about 3%. Australia, 4%. On and on and on it goes. It's so cool.
Mm.
Anyway,
mm.
Oh, yeah. Greece. Greece is usually one of our bigger listeners. Isn't that weird? Yeah. It's just so fascinating to look at those things, and I want to give a shout-out to the Philippines. They're at 4.76% of
us. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, we're always pleased to hear that all these people listening in. It's great.
It's fun, and it's fun to hear people listen from all over the world. That's what's great about the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can bring some information to somebody somewhere around the world, that's absolutely brilliant. I love it.
And you can tell people tonight, David, our phone number, because if any of those people or anybody else wants to call in and tell us about a medical miracle that they've been through, we'd love to hear that. That would be cool.
So our call-in is 347 637 2956. I know most of the time we just chat away, and actually a lot of times I don't look at the phone calls because there's just the two of us and we kind of get into it. But anyway, you know, I'm going to start one because of Greece. There was a story I read years ago, so inspirational, and I kind of can relate to it. Not completely, thank God. Anyway, there was a Greek American who lived in America. He had come from Greece as a young person, and anyhow, he contracted cancer. I believe this is in Washington, D.C. He was here with his family, and he got quite ill, and he was going to die. And doctors had given up hope, and he just said, you know what? I'm going back to Greece. He didn't go to the doctors. And this is, he lived on one of the islands. And he went back to like the family home. And this is, I'm talking about bedridden, barely able to move. And at first all he did was look out the window and watch the oldies. Because unfortunately in Greece, especially on the islands and with not much on the way of industry, a lot of people have left for Australia, the U.S., Canada, England, for work, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyhow, there are a bunch of oldies out there, and he was just like watching them garden, and it's a lovely thing to watch. It's very peaceful, and it was no internet. There was no TV. It was just very rural. And then he said, you know, after a few months, he didn't die, and he thought, I'm going to garden myself. And I mean, we're talking the most minimal gardening possible. Anyway, he started to do it. He started to get stronger. Eventually makes his way down to the so-called village center, which was like probably 20 feet away. And it was just kind of like a few buildings. Anyway, the guys got together, and I think they were playing either cards or dominoes, if I'm not mistaken. Like one of the two. Simple. You know, and it was just, he just was doing this every day, getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Guess what? This happened to this guy.
He
was something like in his 30s and 40s. He lived into his 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It completely went away.
There's a place in Italy that's very much like that, you know. And it's the same idea that it's just a small village. And these people, like, I mean, they just live for over 100 years.
Yep.
And they're still in their late 90s. They're still out doing their gardening and doing all kinds of stuff. And they just, as one doctor said, they just forget to die. They're busy. And that's, you know, probably the same thing. And on top of that, of course, we all know that the Caribbean diet, if you want to call it that, is an excellent diet to be on because...
Are you
the
Caribbean or the Mediterranean?
Well, Mediterranean, I guess,
Not to knock people from the Caribbean and what they eat, because they eat a lot of fish and vegetables. They actually have a good diet, too.
They have the indigenous type diet. And, you know, if you're over there for a while and you're living on that diet, you know, I mean, when we were over there just touring Italy and we were just on that plain Mediterranean diet, I never felt so good.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you.
Here I was, you know, I was walking up and down hills and through the cities and doing, I couldn't believe how much I was able to get around.
Well,
you know.
It reminded me of that story when I was in Cornwall 3 years ago. I can't believe it's 3 years. It's unbelievable. Anyhow, because of my maladies like you, not quite on your level yet, but I'm a little bit younger. It had been 20 years since I had traveled, and certainly by plane.
Mm-hmm.
I could make a few hours in a car. I mean, I have serious muscle problems. Anyhow, I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. I've seen people, you know, people go for operations. You know, they had to be, you know, hauled off in a gurney or whatever on an airplane.
Oh, yeah.
I can do it. So I really had no idea what I was going to be able to do. I felt I was regenerating. And I don't know. I know part of it is supposedly not having the stress. But
Maybe it's like going back in time as we're going in that direction.
I'm telling you.
You feel younger.
I'm telling you. And I tell myself, if I ever got cancer, I'm moving to Cornwall because I was feeling myself regenerating. I don't know what it was, but I could tell a difference, and I was, it was like I was getting better. And I tell that story that I had these warts in my finger that I think I've told, said this before, but I had one wart. I'm like, oh, what the heck is that? You know, and I tried that. What is that stuff called? Compound W or something?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just salicylic acid or whatever. Well, of course, it spread it like mad. It didn't get rid of it. It just spread it. So now I had lots of little ones surrounding the big one. Then it went to other fingers. It was just growing like mad. I don't know how many I had. And on my thumb, you couldn't even see my fingerprint. And
really?
I said, you know what? Oh, yeah. It was crazy. I said, I'm just going to leave these. I don't care how unsightly. I always notice people looking at my fingers because they had these things on me. And I figured, you know, typical, just like quite the freak. But anyhow, went to Cornwall in 3 days' time. And they were itchy, by the way, for people that have warts. It's a virus on the top of your skin. It's a bit itchy. And I would be pecking away at it. And I kind of like that feeling of pecking away. But, you know, it's like pecking at a scab. You know, weirdly, we like that sort of thing. But anyway, I didn't even think about it. And my nephew says to me, Uncle, your warts are gone. Good for you. And I don't know. He thought I was doing something. I remember this was at a kitchen table over in Cornwall. I looked down. 3 days, Judith. 3 days. Gone. Nothing. I wasn't putting anything on them. Gone. All I could think of is I know it has to do with your immune system. Why I'm fighting something here. There's something killing me in Rhode Island. And same with you, actually. That's I don't think it's because we're on vacation. Because I just went to Chicago a couple of weeks ago. And I wanted to see if I started to regenerate myself there, too. And I really wasn't. No.
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 Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's the water, the air, though. I think it's the way of life. There's
well, it is. It is, and it is where you know, when you go to these different places, whether it's Italy or any of these places, these people are, you want to call them stuck in time, but they're stuck at a good part of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, if we could just go back to when we weren't eating chemicals all the time.
Right.
And we were actually growing gardens and eating what, like I did when I was a kid, we would be healthier. I still say we would be healthier if we could just go back.
I grow this massive garden, which, you know, lasts for months of the year because, let's face it, we live in a cold climate and some things like the onions can make it the whole year, but mostly everything we eat basically fresh. The days of canning and jarring and drying are over for me. I mean, I just don't do it. But anyhow, some of the stuff can go, like broccoli can go into the cold season, carrots, beets. But nevertheless, I still contend, whether it's the water here, yes, the chemtrails and pollution from that, it doesn't make a difference the way it did when I was a kid. I'm telling you, the food just still isn't. Although I have to say, brag about my tomatoes. Oh, my God, Jeff. These things look like baby trees. It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
My tomatoes,
yeah.
We've had so much rain. And,
yep.
You know, I put tons of manure in my secret formula. And my lettuce is just humongous. I mean, I had some red leaf lettuce that was like 2 feet across. I mean, it's so great. Anyhow, but nevertheless, it doesn't seem to help me that much. It's weird,
mm-hmm.
Real weird. Whereas going to Cornwall, I think if I went to Italy, Greece, something like that, something about those areas starts to heal me. Anyway, let's get into some, do you got some stories for us?
Yeah, you know, I was going to, I told you about this young man who came into the emergency room and he went immediately into a cardiac arrest. And after a very long time of trying to revive him, they pronounced him dead.
Yep.
And then after quite a while after they had pronounced him, the one doctor started to walk down the hall to go check on his other patients and stuff. And he heard a voice. And he said, I literally believe I heard the voice of God.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, go back and pray over that man. And he said, I just kept walking, tried to brush it off. He said, it got louder. Go back and pray over that man. So he said, I thought, you know, all right, I'm going to do it. I'll probably make a fool out of myself praying over a dead guy, but I'm going to do it. So he went back. He said a prayer over this dead guy. And, I mean, the monitor showed that he was dead, and I mean, he'd been pronounced. So yep. In walked this other doctor who had been on the code, which is, you know, what they call reviving a person. And he came in, and he said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm praying. And he says, what are you praying about? He said, that man is dead. And he said to him, shock him one more time. And he says, I'm not going to shock him. He's dead. He's been dead for practically an hour or more. And he says, he's dead. So he said, no, you shock him one more time. And the guy said, oh, God, you know. And he goes over and he gets the paddles and he goes over and he shocks him one more time.
Mm-hmm.
And his heart started to beat. And when he woke up, when this guy came to, he was totally normal. They did all kinds of scans on him. They did all kinds of studies on him afterwards, and they could find absolutely nothing wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that doesn't surprise me, you know. I know some patients have actually been put into the morgue. And it happened right here in Westerly one time. They took a patient in. The patient had coded. There was no reviving him. It was just flatline all the way. And they took him down. They put him into this refrigerator. It's where they put him on. They put him on this, it's like a gurney thing, and they slide him in, and that's it, you know. They just wait for the mortician to come get him. And the mortician and that came in, or one, I guess it was one of the other nurses went down to take another patient down there, and she noticed the sheet moving. And she kept looking, and sure enough, the sheet was moving. So she put her hand in and just touched this dead body, supposedly, and she could feel a pulse in his neck. So she pulled him out quick, and she went, the doctor who was in there doing post-op, you know, not post-op, but he was, what do you call it, when they're checking to see what they died from. Anyway, he was busy in there working. Post-mortem. I couldn't think of that word. And he was doing a post-mortem, and she said, this guy's breathing. And he says, for God's sakes, he's been in here like 24 hours. He's not breathing. She says, I'm telling you, he's alive. So he went in and he put his hand up and got a carotid pulse, and he goes, oh, my God, he is alive. And they pulled him out. They sent him down to the emergency room. They completed reviving him, warming him up and doing all that. Now, could it have been cooling his body down, cooled everything down enough that when he wouldn't have been warming up. But it happens that way, and it even happened with this little two-year-old. The two-year-old baby had gotten out of the yard, and he went down into a swamp area, and he drowned. He'd been out there at least 50 minutes underwater. And they pull this baby up, and they bring him in, and they try to revive him. And there's just, I mean, he's in this state where, you know, when they're brain dead and they're having really major brain problems, they'll put their hands up and they'll posture. And he was posturing, but he didn't have a pulse. He had nothing. And so they tried reviving him over and over and over again. They tried everything they could, and it was just nothing. And finally, they just say, you know, I really think this baby's just, he's dead. And the one doctor said, no, let's try one more thing. And they took him and they put him in a hyperbaric chamber. And he still had an intubation tube down and everything. And they were going to breathe for him. They put him in there. And they put him down as cold as they could get him.
Mm-hmm.
And when they started to bring him back up 2 days later and warm his body up, his eyes opened up. He started to pull on his intubation tube, and he seemed to be alert enough that he seemed to know what was going on.
Hmm.
They pull him out, and this baby, when they had tested him before when they had done the code, and then they checked his brain function, and he had no brain function according to the brain scan. And so they take him down, they do another brain scan on this kid, and it's totally normal.
Hmm.
So they do, at times, they will take patients, especially children, and they'll put them into these chambers where they can cool the body way, way, way down. And then they will bring them up gradually after a couple of days and see if they'll revive. And a lot of them have. I just saw a program on a child with rabies. And I was watching this just last night. And it was this little girl, and she had been bitten by a bat. It was one of those vampire bats. And it was just one little nick. That's all it took.
Great.
And so this little girl was dying. And they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. And when they tested her, they found out she had rabies. And the chance of her surviving that was like 1%. So the one doctor said, I want to try one thing. It's either bring her here and let her die. We'll just darken the room and let her be peace and try to keep her comfortable, or you can send her home and let her die at home, or we can try one more thing. And he said, it's never been done before, but we could try it. And he wanted to induce a coma with her and put her into a deep coma. And they took her, put her on the intubation, they intubated mm-hmm. her. And then they also put her on a heart-lung machine. So
okay.
her entire body was at rest. And they left her that way for 1 week. And when they brought her back up, could open her eyes, and she knew her parents and everybody. And when they tested her, the disease was gone.
How?
So the disease was gone. The medications that they were allowed to give her when she was still alert and awake.
Mm-hmm.
With rabies, see, when you get rabid, you still know everything that's going on around you. You're alert enough. It's just that it's a miserable, horrible death. But
right, it
you
affects
understand
your central
everything.
Nervous system.
Yeah, you understand that you're going through this. You're going through seizures. You're going through everything. So it didn't make any difference if they gave her that medication while she was still alert and awake, because it just wasn't working. I mean, the lab results and everything were staying the same. They were getting worse.
There does seem to be something to that whole thing. I'm not really sure how it works because...
Well, it's letting the body rest.
Yeah, but it's resting, but at that temperature, virtually nothing's even happening. You know what I mean? See, for instance, like when we go to sleep and we rest, that's supposedly very important for us because that's when our body goes through all sorts of functions and whatever. I'm assuming at these super cold temperatures, yeah, I don't think much of anything's even happening. Not that
well, it is, and at that point, I mean, that's what would put the entire body to rest. So your body's not fighting anything off. So therefore, when you're giving it medication, the medication has more of a chance of of working.
Well, I mean, even circulation and whatnot, it's barely happening at that. Well, except she's on a hot and lung.
She was on a heart and lung machine, so she had good circulation. It just rested the heart from having to pump. It rested her organs is what it did. And it rests the brain. And she actually, you know, she actually came out of it and survived it. And for a kid, you know, that's pretty good when somebody can survive rabies, because...
Yeah, once it's actually gotten taken hold...
Once you start with the symptoms, your chances of surviving are just practically non-existent. So it is at least one thing they can try with these patients and see how many could possibly survive it. I mean, today, in the United States, of course, people can get injections and they don't have a problem. This was in a country where they didn't have injections. They couldn't even get to a doctor. You know, it took forever to get this child to a doctor. So by the time she got there, it had been like three days since she started with symptoms. So she's already in you know, big doo-doo over that. And then when they decide to do this and experimented on her, but by God, she came out. And they really thought when she'd come out of it that she'd be a vegetable.
Right.
And she absolutely wasn't. She was all right. So it was a very interesting story. And it just happened to be that it was on a program last night about this little girl. And it was like, oh, this is what we're going to be talking about. So,
well, you know what's weird is some of these people, who is it? Walt Disney? Is he still Frozen or something?
Yeah.
There are these folks that, you know, it's like a California thing. And I've seen it on some like murder mystery shows where they, whatever, they end up killing, well, sort of kill the person. And they're like, no, I didn't commit murder. The person's still alive. They're just in one of those cryogenic things. Those things actually exist. And supposedly there are these folks in this limbo waiting for scientific advancement, maybe 50 years from now, and then bring them back. What's the point? You won't know anybody. And I don't know.
Well,
I don't know if there's a limit to this.
You'll have all new friends. I mean, you won't know anybody, but at least you'd be still alive.
Freaky. Because what is your consciousness doing? Are you just in limbo? Does it just seem like
I would imagine you must be, or it just shuts right completely down. You know, I've had episodes where I have coded like three times now.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say that when my vital signs tank all three times, I just went into this dark place.
Ooh.
And
but you were conscious of it, though.
I was conscious of the darkness.
Correct.
But I saw the darkness as I was coming to, as I was, evidently my vital signs were coming up. But I had no feeling of anything. It was the lights were on, bam, the lights were off. And the lights didn't come on again until they revived me and got my vital signs back up again.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a complete place of darkness. It was just black. And I could hear them walking around. I could hear people talking. And I would finally struggle to get my eyes open. And, you know, it's sort of like the way you come out of anesthesia sometimes, you know. You just have a hard time getting out of the anesthetic, and so
right,
somewhat similar.
Yeah.
So
don't know what to say about that one, but yeah. Anyway, there's an interesting case. This is certainly related, of course, and I think some of these things can be lumped into different categories as to why these things work. There may be some medical reason why these cryogenic things work, and though I still question how much they know about it. Otherwise, I think it'd be being used more often, but it seems like an option of last resort, if at all. But anyhow, there's also a school of thought, at least with some diseases. I don't think there's anything out there that's universal. Sometimes it's just not your time. You're not going to die no matter what. Sometimes there is, like, a doctor comes up with this amazing plan or what idea, and there is science behind it. Other times there's no science behind it. Who even knows what's how it all worked? They can't figure it out. And then there are ones where there are, like, with your thoughts and how thoughts can create diseases. And we've done shows on Louise Hay before. She made it big in the early 80s with the Heal Your Body, Heal Your Life, that, those sorts of books, and the thoughts behind each sort of ailment. And some apply, some, you know, and she said, if it doesn't apply, just chuck the book in the corner. Anyway, moving on. Keeping that in mind about, there was this woman named Anita Murjani, a woman of ethnically Indian descent, meaning East Indian, India, the country. And she was living in Hong Kong, and she had lymphoma. It progressed to the stage 4 lymphoma. She was dying. They were giving her a very short time to live. People were coming from abroad, her family, to come visit her before she died. You know, her husband, the whole nine yards, it was, we're talking dead, you know, no hope, blah, blah, blah. Hong Kong's as modern as it gets on the planet. They couldn't do anything for her in the hospital. So anyhow, she dies. When she dies, she had this out-of-body experience, which I won't even talk about some of the stuff that happened to her, because it sort of verifies the fact that even though she was clinically dead, she saw her brother, she saw people, you know, and was able to accurately say what they were thinking, saying, doing, that sort of stuff. Anyway, but what she was told about, she still had a choice to come back, and she's like, what for? And by the way, her name is, again, Anita Murjani. She's big on YouTube. She's one of the largest. She has a large, I don't want to say she has a large following. She does a lot of talks about near-death experiences because of how she came out of this. Okay, so she's got stage 4 lymphoma, dying. The body's simply giving out. There's nothing they can do for her. She has this out-of-body experience. They, on the other side, whatever these beings are, explain to her her thoughts behind it that created it. Okay? And so she, and they said, no, you can go back. And you will be completely healed. Okay, now she already died from this thing. So she's like, okay, I'm happy here, but all right. All right, I'll go back. Because she's had family and everything, so she does. And they're like, oh my God, you came back. Okay, but, you know, we know you only have hours to, like, a day or whatever. She's like, no. I'm going to be fine. And they're like, okay. 4 days, Judith. 4 days. She was healed. She was out of the hospital. Somehow she said, like, you know, she changed the, whatever that thought was. I don't even remember what she said it was. She doesn't even really focus on that so much as to what it was, as to how to live your life. You know, basically, don't worry about anything else. Do what you love. Be happy. You know, those basic things, like the guy in Greece putzing around in the garden. If nothing else, we'll go with the food is, the water's cleaner and the food is more wholesome. He doesn't have to worry. He doesn't care what anybody else. He doesn't need to pay any bills, whatever. So that's all done with. And all that stuff is off his mind. I don't know what the answer to his cure was, but with her, it was changing her thought patterns that created her illness. And so she goes around telling people about that and what she thinks a way to live. Now, other people, I think, can change all they want and they're still going to die. But for her, that worked. And it was an absolute medical miracle. So, just stunning stuff. Stage 4 lymphatic cancer, lymphoma. She's in the hospital. They know it's happening. She dies. And, you know, spirits on the other side tell her what's what. And back she comes. And she looks fantastic, by the way.
Wow.
For a dead person. Even for a live person, she looks fantastic. She's just got a wonderful warmth about her because she just, you know, has given up all the crap of life and just embraces life that.
You know, you kind of see that with a lot of these people who have gone through this. And there have been doctors who have actually died and come back.
Yep.
And you know, as far as a lot of different medical problems, I mean, it could be just about anything that could take their life.
That's right.
I mean, it doesn't have to be cardiac or something. It could be just anything. But when a lot of these people come back, it's amazing, but they either still have their cancer, but it doesn't progress, or the cancers are healed. They're gone.
There was
one guy here, his name was Ray Jackson, and he had a kidney removed at Duke University Medical Center. And they told him it was cancer and that he probably didn't get all of the cancer because of the way it was. And 2 years later, he had to have a finger removed because the cancer had spread to the finger. Then the cancer was found in his spine, pelvis, breastbone, and leg.
Lovely.
And he had no more than 1 year to live. And his friends began to pray for him for a healing. And he woke up one night with a voice saying he'd be healed. He attended this. Remember Catherine Kuhlman?
Yes, I loved her.
A tremendous healer.
Yeah, she was bizarre in many ways, but I was mesmerized by her as a child. And
the
thing I liked
about her was that even after there was a healing, she had all kinds of medical studies done on these people to prove that they were totally healed. So anyway, he attended one of her miracle services, and the pain disappeared while he was there. This is a guy full of cancer.
Yeah.
And the test the next day showed that the lesions were there, but that there had been like a bone had filled in some of the areas where the lesions were. Because he had, you know, the cancer in his bones. And shortly after that, he went back to the university hospital. And they confirmed. I mean, that's a well-known hospital. They confirmed he was totally cancer-free. So, I mean, you know, sometimes I think it has a lot to do with a lot of these patients were prayed over. And I think prayer is an extremely positive thing. And I think, you know.
Oh, my God, yeah.
They used to say when you came into the hospital with a heart attack, if you had a negative personality, you were going to die. But if you had a positive personality, the chances were pretty sure that you'd survive it.
Right.
Because positive people just don't stop and say, oh, I'm going to die. Oh, yeah. You know, they don't do that. And they say, well, I might die. Maybe I won't. Whatever. And they survive. It's a positivity that can help some of these people survive what they're going through. And I think prayer being a positive, I mean, they're just being surrounded by these people's positive energies. Because if all these people are praying, they're being positive. So all that positive energy is just surrounding these people as, you know, as they get prayed over. And I don't know. I mean, that happened with my own father, okay, when I was probably 12. He had a massive heart attack. I mean, it damaged two-thirds of his heart.
Right.
And they said that there was no way he could possibly survive that. And the doctors came in and said it's going to take a miracle for him to survive this. And I remember being just that little kid and walking in and seeing, at that time, all of the nuns at Sacred Heart used to wear the long white habits and everything. So he was lying there in his bed, and all these nuns were kneeling around his bed saying rosary. And we went out and we waited, and the doctor said, maybe we'll know something by morning. But he said, I'm not looking forward for this guy to survive this. So anyway, we waited and waited. And my father said that he saw a white figure standing beside his bed. And he looked down, and instead of seeing her little white buttoned-up shoes that they used to wear, he saw feet with sandals. And he said he looked up, and it was a man standing there. And the man had a dark beard. He had dark hair to his shoulders. And he reached over, and he put his hand on his on my father's chest. And when he did, all the pain left him. And he said, you know, the only thing he could think of was this is Jesus. Because he said to me later on, we used to see these paintings of Jesus all over the place with blue eyes and blondish hair and all this stuff. And my father looked at it one day and he said, they're wrong, you know. He's got the most beautiful brown eyes I've ever seen. He never discussed it, but he always believed that Jesus was there. And I think Jesus appeared to him because of all of the prayers that were going on around him by these beautiful women who absolutely believed in what they were doing, and they believed in prayer. And so the next morning, the doctor came out to us, and he said, I don't know what happened or how he did it, but I think he's going to survive this. And my mother said, you think he's going to live? He said, absolutely. I think he's going to survive this. And he did. And as they studied his heart after, it showed damage, but it was functioning like a heart that wasn't damaged. And so he worked until retirement age and never slowed him down. So, I mean, that was just something in our own family that happened, you know. And I think, you know, this praying and stuff, I really think that is a tremendously powerful positive thing that people do, and I think that people can help someone. It's like when I was in not long, you know, what was that, three or four years ago, and I had blood poisoning, and I was not expected. The doctor said she'll either make it or she won't. I had three beings around my bed all night, and they were dressed all in white. And it looked like that white, it just looked like a shimmery white material. And their skin was snow white, and they didn't seem to talk, but I seemed to understand that they were saying something, and I tried to lean forward to answer them. And I could hear my family members and my brother saying, you're all right, just lie down, you're okay. Because the family stayed there. They stayed with me. And I kept thinking, you know, I got to see what this person is saying. The three beings looked exactly alike. It wasn't they three different types of beings. They looked alike. And I don't remember them even having hair or anything. They were just these snow-white beings and shimmery. And when I reached out, I couldn't quite touch the fingertips of the one that was reaching out to me. And I said to my pastor in the morning, what, you know, I told him what happened, and he said, I do believe you have seen angels. And I said, well, I think if I could have touched them, I wouldn't be here. And he said, probably not. But I said, they were trying to tell me something, but I couldn't quite hear it, you know. I couldn't quite get it, but I still think it, you know, I think prayer is such a powerful thing that if you have somebody in and that person is going through a horrible disease, that prayer is the one thing that can give them energy enough to fight it, to come out of it. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yep, there is. There's a lot of those sort of people that seem to be able to do it. I'm just looking for it on YouTube. There's some guy I've watched before. I forget what part of Europe he's from. He has a very thick accent. Might even be Poland. I'm not really sure because they're pretty devout. And he just has claimed it, you know, like a lot of evangelicals. They'll say, you know, through the blood of Christ I heal you or whatever, because they, whatever it is in the Bible, they actually believe it, and they really seem to believe it, and it happens. And these people go all over the world healing people. I can't remember what it's called, the final something or other. Oh, well, doesn't matter. But again, there's tons of stuff on like so-called street healing in the name of Jesus on YouTube, of course, filming everything, but whatever. There's some remarkable stories. But, you know, these stories are all over the internet. And one good source, and I'm glad I went on it, because I sort of made fun of Reader's Digest growing up, because it's, you know, it's a condensed version of a story. I mean, to me, being the way my mind is, I would read every single word in a book. And you get so much of versus a condensed version, it's just not nearly as good as the real thing. But anyway, they have five stunning medical miracles that doctors can't explain. And one was similar to the guy who went back to Greece. The church that cured cancer. Of course, it might not be what you think. This guy was dying. His name was Greg Thomas. He was completely fiddled with cancer at age 56. And this is up in Minnesota, a rural area. And there was a crumbling church there. And what he decided to do was, you know, he was sitting at church looking at the crappy building. And he was looking at the building and the shape it was in. And he said, "Before I leave this earth, Lord, I'd like to do something for you." He decided to fix up the peeling paint and the leaking roof and the mangled steps and the rotting floorboards, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he went to the church association and they said, "Yeah, we agreed to do it." And he said, "I just have to warn you, you know, I've got cancer. I'm going through radiation. It's going to be slow going." And they said, "Great, you know, because nobody else is doing it. We don't have the money." Mm-hmm. So he starts to do this, scraping the paint, replace the boards. He felt himself growing stronger every day. The more he worked on the church, the better he felt. He didn't even have the need for strong prescription pain meds his doctor had prescribed. His oncologist was blown away, and she said, "Whatever you're doing, keep doing," which I'm sure a lot of doctors have said that before. They don't understand it. Just keep doing it. As he continued to rehabilitate the church, his medical scans revealed some startling news. His tumors were shrinking. 4 years and 23 days after Greg's diagnosis, the doctors were able to remove his feeding tube. He had a feeding tube in that whole time. That they had said, as long as he lives, he's going to have this because, you know, he's done. And he'd never be able to eat solid food again. Eating solid food. Today, his tumors are gone. And he's officially in remission and no longer even needs follow-up tests.
See, that's sort of like that guy that went, you know, over to Greece, or the other one that went to Italy. They just forget to die. They get so busy living that they seem to just forget to die. And they just get stronger and stronger.
Well, whatever that was leading them to death got replaced somehow. Whereas, like I say, other times, it is, by the way, in my opinion, this doesn't have to do with good or bad. Meaning, you can be a holy person, for God's sakes, and die at a young age.
Yep.
And my mother has a theory, actually. About some nasty people are so mean that they live on and on and on and on. I think there is something to that, too. I'm telling you. I actually knew somebody who was, it was a terrible thing to say, but, you know, I would look at his blood work. Judith, there's something wrong with every organ in his body. And I would just say, why are you alive? Why is this person alive? He was one of the most nasty people you could imagine. He just was a thoroughly nasty person. And he abused himself so badly. I mean, he had untreated diabetes because he refused to take his medication. His sugar levels were sky high. 400 would be a good day.
Wow.
He was blind because of lack of treatment for his diabetes, destroyed all the small capillaries, couldn't walk, neuropathy. His liver was shot. His kidneys were bleeding. His adrenals were shot. His thyroid was completely shot. He simply was existing in a nursing home for 4 years. And they couldn't, the doctors would say, we don't know why he's alive. We don't know why he's alive. And it would just go on and on and on. Eventually he did die, but he was so mean. So who knows? I don't know if that has anything to do with it at all. But, you know, again, so there are these cases. There's this case where a person's heart, all they could, the doctor said, your heart healed itself. It doesn't make any sense. This guy, who's 23 years old, his heart was pumping out blood at just 25%, which is, of course, a low rate. He was transferred to a Nebraska Medical Center. This guy's name is Michael Crow. By the way, these are all names are given places, dates. This is August 17th, 2012. But 1 hour later, he went from 25% down to 10%. A virus was causing acute myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle. If it got any worse, he would need a heart transplant. Of course, you know, you can't do that on the spur of the moment. The doctors were asking him to sign papers, you know, if he would still be around, that he could have a transplant. They said there'd only be a 30% chance that his heart would ever recover if it didn't get any worse. And this guy said, I remember thinking, I'll take those odds. I haven't won the lottery yet. I'm Irish, and I'm due for some luck. And he goes, I was strangely calm. But anyway, according to his doctor, he had severe heart failure. His cardiologist, Eugenia Reichlin, MD, she said the rate of mortality for what he had was huge. They immediately hooked him up to an ECMO, and his external heart and an external heart lung machine to pump his blood while his heart couldn't. But it was just a short-term fix. He did continued to decline. Okay, so for 17 days, they waited for a heart transplant to come in, and his condition continued to worsen. His heart stopped twice, once for an entire day being hooked up to the ECMO machine prevented him from dying, of course. But, you know, doctors had to fend off blood clots and excessive bleeding. Anyway, he then developed a blood infection. And so, of course, they couldn't do anything about that because of his condition. Anyway, after 4 days hooked up to a different machine that assisted only the right side of his heart, Michael no longer needed a transplant. His heart had completely miraculously healed itself, eradicating the virus on its own. He overcame everything, said the doctor. He was very debilitated, and somehow he rebuilt himself. But the key seemed to be with changing this heart-lung machine and so that they only were controlling part of his heart. And, you know, again, it was this thing that the doctor was led to do, like, okay, one last thing, let's try this.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what they did. And in 4 days.
It's almost like trying an experiment to see if it'll possibly do something.
And it also shows in the shortest amount of time. I mean, even if, for instance, he had an operation that somehow got, or whatever, procedure that got rid of the virus. Guarantee you, he would not have been rebuilt in 4 days. But somehow, when the right conditions are there, we can have miraculous healings so quickly. It's just absolutely unbelievable. No permanent heart tissue damage. They just have no explanation for it.
Right. It's like the cancers that just disappear. They're just gone. And those people go on to live the rest of their life perfectly healthy. You know, we had a little boy that was brought in up at the hospital when I was working, and when he came in, we were all like, to say to the doctor, you know, how come you're admitting him? He got hit with a golf ball. I mean, you know, and he says, I got a bad feeling about him, and I want you to watch him really closely. So we admitted him, and he was sitting in his bed watching TV, eating a popsicle, when all of a sudden he just coded. He just went into a seizure, and he coded, and it's like, this isn't good. So he got revived there. Then they took him over to New London, which is, a town near here, because they had a neurological department. They took him over there. he coded in the ambulance. That's the second time. He coded when they took him out of the ambulance for the third time. He coded in the emergency room, which was the fourth time. He coded on the operating table, which was the fifth time. And they figured there's nothing going to be left to this kid's head. He had a subdural hematoma, which is a large blood clot and bleeding under the bone on the edge of the brain. But it was a massive bleed. Mm-hmm. And so when the neurologist came over, I asked him, how was he doing? And he says, "You won't believe it." And I says, "What?" And he said that Johnny, which was his name, still is, he said he was pronounced brain dead. And the mother said to us, "My boy is not dead. He'll wake up and he'll be fine." And he said he was in a coma, and she refused to allow any machines to be shut off on him. So he was like that for 2 weeks. She was on her knees at his bedside saying rosary for 2 weeks.
Wow.
She only got up to go to the bathroom, and she came right back. She hardly ate anything. And I said, "So?" And he says, "He woke up." He said, "There's no reason for him to wake up. He was brain dead. But he woke up, and he knew her."
Oh.
And so I said, "So what does he want? And, how is he?" He said, "Well, he is a stroke. He's had a stroke through this. But he said he wants to come back to Westerly, to our small little pediatrics, to have his rehab. He wants to be with you guys." So they brought him back. We couldn't get over how fast he was rehabbing. It was like overnight that he started to be able to use his bad side. He was a total stroke. He couldn't really speak. He couldn't do anything. He completely came out of that. And I saw his mother shortly before she was killed, believe it or not. I saw his mother at the milk store, and I said, "Hey, how's Johnny doing?" And she goes, "Oh, my, Johnny's wonderful." She says, "All he has is a slight drop to one wrist."
Uh-huh.
But she said he's working full-time with his father because his father had a business here. They were electricians, I believe. And he said he's working full-time with his father. He's doing wonderfully. And so they pronounced him dead. I've seen other kids pronounced dead. And, that brain dead. And then something happens and the kid somehow revives.
Hmm.
But, I always said, good Lord knew that she was on her knees for 2 full weeks praying for this child. And he probably figured at that point, I can't take him. I'll just let her have him. And so he survived it. And he's survived, to grow old, which is wonderful.
Wow.
So yeah. There are wonderful stories out there. Anybody who wants to look this stuff up, just look up, medical miracles that have happened, and there's just page after page after page after them. So, sometimes if we're going through hard times, it can be kind of, like a little happy build-up for you. So go read some of these things. Anyway, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, you always do.
Determined, that's what it is, determined.
Oh, yeah.
Probably what keeps, that's what kept my old man alive. He shouldn't have survived 42 with a massive heart attack like that, but he lived to be 80. So, oh, well.
Good for him. That would be a miracle if I made it, but.
Yeah.
The two of us.
Yes, I know. I know. Thanks, so many people with such problems.
I know.
All right. I hope everyone has a great week.
Thanks, Judy.
Bye-bye.
And thanks for listening to The Unknown Zone. I'm Dave Turco for Judy Sellens. Thank you, and listen to us again next week for another hour of The Unusual.